Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 27th. I'm Ray Graff. The Atlanta Braves took a 1-0 lead over the Houston Astros in the World Series last night. NBA, college football underway. Tom Brady is doing amazing things on the football field at age 97. Jim Lavoulis, beloved Buffalo Sabres, are doing well. The UConn women's basketball team poised to make another run at a 12th national title. There's much to talk about in sports, and we have a couple of great folks here to talk to you about them. Amy Bass, professor of sports studies at Manhattanville College, and our news director, Ian Pickus. You want to talk sports? Give us a call. Of course, there are a lot of controversies and scandals to discuss as well, and it's public radio, so I'm sure we'll go that way. 800-348-2551, and you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get it underway after news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. We talk sports every so often, and we do it today with Amy Bass and Ian Pickus. Amy is professor of sports studies and chair of the Division of Social Science and Communication at Manhattanville College. Bass is the author of One Goal, A Coach, A Team, and The Game That Brought a Divided Town Together, among many other titles. In 2012, she won an Emmy already for her work with NBC Olympic Sports on the London Olympic Games. Ian Pickus, you know him? You heard him recently? A couple of moments ago, he's our news director. He's an avid Yankees fan and somewhat less avid Jets fan and a fierce beer league competitor in softball. And you could see the picture of him on our webpage today. Very impressive. Hey, you got a sports question or you want to talk about something in sports? Give us a call, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. Amy Bass joins us via the phone. Amy, how are you?
I'm okay. Thanks for having me on. Excited to be here today.
Very excited to have a Red Sox fan here and a Yankees fan. And Ian Pickus, that picture of you almost looks like Harmon Killebrew.
Minus a lot of talent and many years.
And some pounds, I might add.
I'll take it. I've got his rookie card. I got it for my 11th birthday.
Really?
That's the kind of 11-year-old I was. By the way, I'm just glad that Amy and I could fill in after the Mannings were a late cancellation today.
You know, I'm so glad you brought up the Mannings. We'll start with, there's so much to talk about. There's the World Series, and then there's some very disquieting news from around sports as well. But you brought up the Mannings, and I'll ask Amy first, since you were a TV person, and I guess still are a media person. Have you seen the Peyton and Eli show?
I have not seen the Manning cast.
It's really cool. I love it. I mean, it makes a terrible game almost worth watching.
I've heard it's funny. I've heard it's a little jaded. I've heard it's actually fairly insightful. So I look forward to it.
How about you, Ian?
I got to check out Marshawn Lynch giving the FCC alarm the other night while he joined them for a couple of moments. I think that's really where sports media is going in a lot of ways. You know, we've seen the evolution of this where ESPN has had dedicated feeds for one side or another.
Yeah.
And we've all kind of adopted the second screen experience while watching sports where you're looking at Twitter or you're watching a simulcast. And now they've gotten two of the best who are great together. And I think the sky's the limit. You're almost seeing the evolution of, how do we take someone like Tony Romo, who's just an excellent NFL commentator, and, you know, ramp that up to the degree where we can make an entire broadcast out of it? And that's where we are.
It'll be very exciting to see Monday because, you know, I'm a Giants fan and the Giants stink perennially. But it'll be fun to see Eli do this show with Peyton while the Giants are getting whomped by the Kansas City Chiefs on Monday.
You think so? You're taking the Chiefs in that one?
You know, one of the things about that show that I thought was very interesting last week was Sue Bird was on for, I think, the third quarter of the game. And, of course, just a legendary player. And she made some news. She opened the door to maybe coming back to a 19th season. So I thought that was pretty cool. Amy?
Yeah, they're breaking news. They're having, you know, someone like Marshawn Lynch who's not known for chatting and then, you know, drops an F-bomb during the Saints Seahawks game, which was probably appropriate at that moment. But what I think we're seeing is some sports production thinking outside the box. I mean, the popularity of Manning cast and having folks like Sue Bird on to make that kind of a historic announcement, I really credit Snoop Dogg covering equestrian, right, during the Tokyo Olympic Games and you know, talking about the Crip Walk. I think that really Snoop is where all of this sort of got paved.
Hmm. Now, my memory is awful, but the Summer Olympics happened this past summer, right?
Right.
We were on vacation.
They did. It was the 2020 Games, and they took place in 2021.
And we watched them. And, Amy, what do you think about the presentation done this time around?
I mean, you know, I'm biased. I covered the Olympics for NBC for 8 games. So I know what's behind it, which makes me a little bit sympathetic. I thought it was bizarre. I think that a spectatorless Olympics was just a bizarre thing to behold, especially with outdoor venues, when we sort of understand coronavirus and what's possible and what's been going on at sporting events. But, I'm still a sucker for the Olympic Games. I will just, you know, I don't just watch it. I don't even need it fancy. Just hand it to me and I will watch.
And we're going to be on an accelerated schedule now. So, you know, the 2020 games were in 2021. We've got another Olympics right around the corner.
Well, if nothing
we
else.
Do, and it's not going to be controversial or interesting at all because, you know, it's just Beijing.
And that's a great point. I mean, first of all, if nothing else happens, we'll be on an accelerated schedule. But
yeah.
Second of all, there is so much controversy around that pick. And when is the last time they had an Olympics? What, in 2000?
2008.
Yeah.
2008, they hosted the Summer Games. And, you know, because they can do anything, they're now going to host the Winter Games.
Amy, I wanted to bring this up, but we had the first game of the World Series last night, it was. And the Braves now have a 1-0 advantage over the... you know, a team that had some issues with cheating. And apparently, before the game, Rob Manfred said there were plenty of detectives or sleuths or whatever you want to call them monitoring the dugouts and the stands and the clubhouses to find out if there was any problem. But I didn't hear about that. However, you wrote a commentary for this station, and you recorded it and aired it, and we have it on our website. I have it somewhere here. I believe it was from April. And basically, you know, you were talking about the fact that the All-Star Game was supposed to be in Atlanta this year.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Major League Baseball moved it. You were all for that. That was in response to Georgia's SB 202 law, the voting rights law. You know, the World Series is going to be in Atlanta now in a couple of days. What do you think about that?
Well, I kind of stopped paying attention to baseball after the 268th pitch of the ALCS Game 4. So I think, you know, I'm disenchanted with MLB in general right now and with Laz Diaz in particular. But setting that aside, you know, this is a really tough one because you can't move a World Series out of the team that wins the pennant. So, you know, they are where they are. Denver didn't win the pennant, so you can't move the game to Denver as they did with the All-Star game. But this is a tough one. I mean, you've got the tomahawk chop people versus, you know, the cheaters. But for me, you've got an old Boston team versus Dusty Baker. So I really can't have a horse in this race. And I think that, you know, there's so much wrong with baseball, and yet we still watch it and love it. So it's a tough one, but you can't take the game away from the team that wins the pennant. So, yeah, there's a big baseball game about to happen in Atlanta. And the good thing about America's political amnesia tendencies is that all eyes are on Texas right now. So as long as, you know, we're going to have this conversation, let's talk about what's going on with Texas and Texas laws and the Supreme Court and the controversy there. We've got two pretty controversial cities on the table right now with the World Series and a lot of politics surrounding both of them.
Let me give you two quick rooting angles for this World Series if you're like me and looking for something to latch onto. Number one, I interviewed yesterday Ian Anderson's high school baseball coach.
So cool.
At Shenandoah High School, not far from here in Clifton Park,
yep.
Who amazingly coached Kevin Herter, the star guard for the Atlanta Hawks, and Ian Anderson, the star pitcher for the Atlanta Braves, who were on the same team and are now in the same city in pro sports. So he's 23 years old. They haven't announced yet, you know, who's going to start game three. But I thought the Braves did a very good job in game one to get a game there. It's a hard place to win. they are, I don't think, as good as the Astros are, even if their pitching is a little better. And now they get to go home, and, you know, worst case scenario, they've got a split. Best case scenario, you're up 2-1 with three at home. Possibly Ian Anderson from Clifton Park taking a commanding lead in the series.
That's so exciting. It's so exciting to have been, you know, grown up in this area and then to see that. And the guy is so young, and he's going to start a World Series game. It's
and last year, you know, he had a sparkling rookie season, but no one was really there to see it. The playoffs were in neutral sites. And this is, you know, a home playoff game that he has a chance to start amazing. Number two, I am an evangelist for a book that's about 10 years old now called One Shot at Forever by Chris Ballard.
A great book.
Great book about a group of basically farm boys who went all the way to the Illinois State Championship game, high school baseball team. And this was before Illinois reclassified. So at the state championships, you had huge schools from Chicago playing against whoever came out of the fields, right?
Yeah.
On that team was a young man named Brian Snitker, who is now the manager of the Atlanta Braves. So although I am not a Braves fan and I have enjoyed the times the Yankees have beaten them in the World Series, I am excited for him.
Was it 99? Was that the one where the Yankees surprised the Braves?
Well, they did it in 96.
Was it 96?
Yeah, 96.
But they did beat them again in 99. And that was the Braves' last trip here.
You know, I don't follow professional baseball, as I've said before. I'm a Mets fan. And so I've seen the Braves, a lot of the Braves, and I have every reason to despise the Braves. And there are a lot of teams. My wife will say, "Will you shut up about the teams that you hate?" And she has to suffer through 162 games as well. But the Braves, to me, this batch seems like a character team. Like Freddie Freeman seems just the, and you only get this from a third person. You're looking at it through the lens of a camera, so I can't be sure. But from what I've seen watching all the times the Mets have played the Braves this year, they just seem like a really solid character team. So I got to root for them.
I think they have a lot of heart to be here. I mean, let's be honest, right? They're not the best team in this playoff field. The Dodgers, the Giants, the Red Sox, the Rays.
I
would say any of them going into this thing, you're expecting them to win the pennant. The Braves won 88 games. Freddie Freeman's been in the big leagues for 12 years. He is an absolute winner through and through. And, you know, there was a great New York Times story about him the other day about his role as a first baseman, greeting people, talking to people when they get to first, no matter what the score is, no matter if they're winning or losing, telling people, hey, good job. What do you think about that outside pitch? You can just tell. And for them to survive the loss of Acuna to still be here in the World Series, it says a lot about them.
Let's take a quick break here.
But they have another giant loss. I mean, I want to just add a dose of reality to sort of this almost Cinderella story, although I don't think you really can have a Cinderella story in the major leagues. They lost Charlie Morton last night.
What a performance, though. I pitched at least an inning with a broken leg.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, who knew? But, yeah, his fibula, from what I understand, is shattered. So we're not going to see him again. Maybe we'll see him in, you know, March. But that's got to shake the Braves up a little bit because, you know, yes, you took one at Minute Maid Park. I can attest personally that that doesn't guarantee you anything. But losing Charlie Morton, that's harsh.
Let me give you one quick stat before the break, and that is teams that have won Game 1 of the World Series have won 57% of World Series.
57%.
But I remember in 1986 that didn't happen. Let's take a break here. 800-348-255 Wanted Sports Today. Amy Bass and Ian Pickus join us. Email address is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551. Amy Bass is professor of sports studies and the chair of the Division of Social Science and Communication at Manhattanville College. Ian Pickus is a man about town and a news director here at WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk sports. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Gina writes, Amy Bass. I absolutely loved her book, One Goal, and gave it to our entire high school soccer team. Can't say it led them to the New York State Championship title, but it didn't hurt. Love it when you have a sports show and hope you do it regularly. How could women's soccer do better in their fight for pay equity? In my mind, they shouldn't ask for equality to men. They should get more. And that's from Gina. Amy, I throw it to you.
Oh, I wish pay equity was the biggest problem women's soccer had right now. Because with the revelations that have come out of the NWSL in the last couple of weeks, they're dealing with more than pay equity. But I think that the women's soccer players have definitively proven their mettle, and now with this latest in terms of the sex abuse scandals and the sexual harassment scandals, I think that their voices are only getting stronger. The support systems around them. I really hope that the U.S. men's national team becomes more vocal on their behalf. I would love to see that. All of that is tempered, of course, and I think if we want to know how much women's soccer means in the United States, one of the great athletes of all time exited from the game yesterday with Carly Lloyd. And I dare anyone to take a look at Carly's exit from the pitch and keep their eyes dry, because it was a really amazing farewell. She was pulled from the game in the 66th minute. She's been the center of that team for 15 years.
Yeah.
They demolished South Korea in the friendly that they were playing. I think the score was 5-0.
6-0.
There you go. And, Lloyd coming off that field, taking off her jersey, taking off her cleats, revealing her married name on her second jersey, and a standing ovation that just seemed like it was never going to end. So, I don't think they have to keep making their point about how important they are and how much they're worth. But I hope that we continue to stay loud and get louder in terms of support of what they've got to do.
This email for Ian. Ian, this one comes from Johnny in Half Moon. I was down in New York City listening to the sports talk radio the day after the Yankees got knocked out by the Red Sox in the wild card game. I heard a lot of the Yankees not going to the World Series in 12 years is not acceptable. What are your thoughts on this? And as time goes on, will it have to become acceptable to Yankees fans? Ooh. And that's from Johnny in Half Moon.
Johnny's very smart, I just want to say.
A little snarky, too, I might add. Go ahead.
I kind of dig Johnny.
I've thought about this question a lot more than I care to admit. Here's the deal. The Yankees have not had a losing season in 29 years. There is very little on paper to complain about. That doesn't make it any less frustrating if you follow 162 games to get to a one-game playoff against your hated rival and lose, especially with the team they have now. They've got a core together, and I think they thought they would have punched a ticket by this point. And it hasn't happened. They've been close. They lost an excruciating series to the Astros. They lost to the Rays in the playoffs. They have been so close to grabbing that brass ring with this crew right now. And they've decided to keep Aaron Boone next year with new coaches. But I think we're kind of seeing the end of a chance to grab the brass ring with this particular group. Now, if you spend as much as they do, you really can't go 12 years without making a World Series. That, it's not acceptable for the expectations that they are setting for themselves. For any other team, ask the Milwaukee Brewers how much they'd love to go to a World Series. I mean, they've had good teams the last few years, and it's just not happened. But I do think they have lost ground a bit. They really did everything they could just to get to a one-game playoff this year, while teams like the Rays were just better.
Okay, now let's talk about the Rays for a minute. And we are talking sports with Amy Bass and Ian Pickus. The number here is 800-348-2551 if you want to join in. And we'll get to the phones shortly. 800-348-2551. Amy or Ian, do either of you know what the payroll is for Tampa?
It's low.
It's low.
It's very low.
And they're very good, and they have been very good. They seem to do it almost with mirrors, and they are the thorn in the side of so many teams.
And you think there's like $130 million between the Yankees' payroll and the Rays' payroll.
And I think the Yankees have learned that's about roster construction. A guy like Kevin Kiermaier doesn't get paid as much as a Giancarlo Stanton does, right?
Yeah.
But he plays a plus defense, and he's going to put the ball in play, and he's fast. And so you get enough guys like that who do the little things, you know, all of a sudden the whole the sum is greater than the parts.
You know, I listen to the talk about the Yankees. It's unacceptable and yada yada yada. And we'll get into this whole one game wild card, which I hate. But just for a moment, take it from a Mets fan perspective. My buddy Charlie Volker does afternoon drive on a sports talker up the dial around here. And he went in, and we have been friends forever and have been Mets fans for over 50 years. And it's tough. The bitterness lingers over the years. There is a handful of good years, and the rest just stink. And his point about where the Mets are today, you hired your pitching coach. Good move. You got no GM, you got no manager, you got no president of baseball operations, but thank God you got the baseball, you got the hot dog vendors in place, you got the parking attendants in place, and you got your pitching coach. The Mets, compared to the Red Sox, compared to the Yankees, there is nothing. There is dysfunction.
And they were in first place as late as any team to finish under 500 this year. I picked them to make the playoffs. I thought the Mets had it going together this year. I mean, I there's a lot to like there, but now you got to kind of start over in front office and manager-wise. You have no idea how healthy the pitching is going to be. And you're watching the hated division rival Braves with a not great team go on this run to the World Series.
Here's how bad it is.
But I do think you have to talk about front office, right? If you're going to talk about something like the success of the Rays versus the colossal chaos dumpster fire that is the front office of the Mets, the Rays front office is about as highly functioning as a front office gets. And so, you know, when their highest paid player, what Kiermaier's at, what, $12 million? You know, it's a drop in the bucket, but they run a really efficient show, and that team is aces.
You know, and at least you do have that on your side, Ray, as a Mets fan. I mean, you got a guy who owns a team who wants to spend money on the team.
And he's a Mets fan.
For a change.
Grew up a Mets fan, so, although he did try to buy the Dodgers, but that's another story. The number here is 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. One more email, and then we'll hit the phones. This is from Robert in Milford, Pennsylvania. Robert says, I have no skin in the game and only see Houston's excuse for a stadium a few times a year. Seriously, though. Who or what designed that monstrosity? And that's from Robert in Milford, Pennsylvania.
You know, it's funny. They've changed it. There used to be giant hill in center field. Now there's just the wall that juts out.
Oh, I love that hill. When Beltran went up that hill to make that catch, and a couple of guys have done that. But, I mean, God, that was cool. And that was actually, now you guys might know, that was patterned after another stadium way back when. What was that?
Oh, gosh. I'll say Scheib Park just because it sounds old, but I have no idea.
I'll just back Ian up because I want to be a team player.
All right, fair enough. Let's go to the phones. Chris and Housatonic. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, I was wondering something. Two things. First of all, the Braves are up 1-0, not 2-0. Secondly, I got a question for Amy. I'm an average bowler, Amy. And have there been any 900 series bowling series lightly and bowling?
Okay, so 900 would be 300 games in a row, Amy Bass.
You know, I gave a talk once in the Bowling Hall of Fame, and that's about the extent of my knowledge on bowling.
Oh, well.
Is that I have been there.
I mean, it would seem extraordinarily unlikely, but I guess it could happen.
I guess, I mean, you know.
I mean, if you can do 300, I'm sure you can do it thrice.
And bonus points for using the word thrice. Chris, thank
you. Thrice wins the day.
This email came in from Mark. The men's basketball team at UConn has been lost in space for a few years.
Yep.
That's understandable considering the turmoil around the program. But the women's team hasn't won the title, and he's right, since 2016. Now that UConn is finally back in the Big East, what do you think their chances are for the upcoming season? What do the women need to do? Is Big East basketball now coming back? And that is from Mark. Amy, I'll give you first dibs.
You know, I think that one of the things that's happened to the UConn women is similar. We had someone ask about the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, is that everyone else has gotten better. So I think that, you know, you have a program that was the Cadillac, and, you know, there was a handful of them. But with the acceleration of the support for women's basketball in this country, the increasing success and visibility of the WNBA, that creates bigger pipelines, deeper pipelines. And so I think that, you know, maybe it means the comeback of the Big East, but I think that what we're really seeing is a bigger national landscape for women's basketball.
Ian.
I've gotten to see UConn a few times in the past 5 or so years because the NCAA has made Albany one of the regional sites for the NCAA tournament. And so UConn, you know, gets a home venue effectively playing in Albany as they try to cut the nets down. So I've gotten to see UConn play a bunch of times, and which has been amazing. I would say, you know, they do have a bit of a drought going, but that drought, here's what it looks like. They make the title game and lose on a fluke bucket. They get to the Final Four,
right,
and they lose a semifinal. I mean, UConn is still the class of the sport, and everyone's still trying to catch them. They are the most consistent and the most effective team in that tournament year in and year out. It is very difficult to win 6 games in March, and they've come up with 4 or 5 wins a couple of times.
No.
But I think even Gino has admitted it, that the women's game is changing, and that UConn was maybe caught a little flat-footed, and they're working on it.
And when you're UConn, too, you get everybody's best shot every night, right?
Correct.
And a lot of times that means you win 100 to 40. But sometimes it means you lose 60 to 58.
Right. Well, they start their season November 14th in Arkansas, and I think the UConn women's team is ranked number 2 going in.
Yep.
Yeah,
they've got some
right.
really strong people returning, and we'll, you know, let's see what Adada and those kinds of what those folks do.
How long do you think, Amy, that Gino will be in charge there?
I don't think Gino will ever not be in charge. Can anyone imagine UConn basketball without him at the helm? I mean, he's...
No, but can you imagine Duke without Coach K?
And yes, apparently I can.
That's a good point. Number here is 800-348-2551 if you want to talk sports with Amy Bass and or Ian Pickus or both at the same time. 800-348-2551. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Wanted to talk about the NFL trade deadline just for a moment. Usually that's boring stuff. But there is this issue about Deshaun Watson and Roger Goodell saying at the owners' meetings, well, yeah, he's not on our exempted list. He's still out there, and you can trade for him. We don't have enough evidence. Amy Bass, you've been following this, I'm sure. He has been accused of sexual assault and harassment in lawsuits filed by 22 women, but not charged. He's still out there for the taking, let's say, by the Jets.
I mean, wouldn't it be interesting if the NFL said that you couldn't go into trade negotiations with any pending legal problems? You know, that way you're not saying, oh, you need to be charged, you need to be this, you need to be that. So, you know, the sexual misconduct allegations are stalling things, certainly. But the NFL should be so hyper-conscious about this stuff because their record is not good. So clean it up and be as clean as possible. That said, you know, we're innocent until proven guilty. So the number of accusations is one thing. The number of charges, you know, the lack of the number of charges is another.
Yeah,
I think you're playing with fire. I mean, I guess a lot of this is just trying to maintain leverage, you know, with some of these trade rumors. But I don't see how a team could make a trade for him and start him. I mean, the outcry, and I don't know, maybe I'm wrong about this. I would like to think that the outcry would be way too loud. You look at, you know, what just happened in baseball with Trevor Bauer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not worth it. I don't care if you're going to win a game or not. It's not worth the sideshow here.
No, and really the onus of responsibility, I think, is not on the NFL at that point, but the Texans. The Texans are the ones that have to make the decision because they're the ones that currently have him.
Yeah. By the way, we got an email from Bob in Saugerty. He's another local connection in the World Series. Tom Hallion, the first base ump last night, grew up in Saugerty's.
Nice.
And I read that the home plate umpire is from Berkshire County, if I'm not mistaken. So,
you know,
from game one.
Speaking of umpiring, and I know it's a sore subject and everything else, but that check swing was not a swing. Did you see it, Amy Beck?
For the third time this postseason.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's the robo ump call on Twitter, you know, as Ian said, we do so many things while we're watching a game, and I'm certainly on Twitter. The call for robo umps, it's interesting because when you look at Game 4 and you look at Diaz, first of all, no one should finish No one should finish watching a baseball game and know the name of any of the umpires. That's my call. And unfortunately, Joe West and Laz Diaz I spoke about way too much in the last month or so. So I think that, you know, when we're looking at changes, and we've seen lots of changes in baseball, right? The player on second, you know, in extra innings, you know, these calls for outlawing shifts, the time of the games. But I think that the robo umpire is the thing that is on the table at this point. And despite the fact that Diaz's poorly called game and what they count, 41 missed calls in that game, but they split almost down the middle between the Astros and the Red Sox. I'm willing to admit that, even though pitch 268 ruined my life. So I think that, you know, I think that that's the real question that we can all debate. Was it a check swing or not a check swing? I think your angle is everything on that. But the base is, are we going to go to automated calls at the plate or not?
I say no. And I'll tell you why. Ian, I'll let you go first, though.
I'm on the other side of this one. I think we're ready for it. And I also have read about the trials in the minor leagues, especially in the independent leagues. Everyone thinks it's weird for a while, then they get used to it, then it's not a source of controversy at all, and we've got the technology to get these things right. You know, and nothing against Country Joe West, but why...
He's 112
really?
Years old, and he can't sing. I've heard his records. I've heard them.
Why are we trusting his eyes at this point when we can tell you how many times a curveball is rotating in 60 and a half feet? Let's just take it out of their hands and stop making the sport look silly.
The number here is 800-348-2551, and we'll get to your calls here in a moment. But I just want to take the other side because I am by nature a contrarian. I am a Mets fan. And I was watching at 5 a.m. a couple of days, I think on Monday, the replay, the Kurt Gowdy encapsulation of the 1973 World Series between the Mets and the A's. And there were a number of times where runners were slid into home and they looked out. The ump called them safe and the other way around. And there were tremendous arguments. And I think to me that was part of baseball. Bud Harrelson throwing his hat on the ground and Yogi Berra coming out and yelling and eventually just sort of walking away. I think you take the human aspect out of the game. And frankly, they want to shorten the games. Oh, let's sit for 6 minutes while they look at the replay in New York. Speaking of that, we got to take a break here. 800-348-2551. Amy Bass joins us. Ian Pickus joins us. Sports Today, your calls coming up. Vox Pop on WAMC. Every 6 months or so, we do sports. And today, an all-star lineup, Amy Bass from Manhattanville College and Ian Pickus, WAMC news director. Robert is in Slingerlands. Robert, you're on.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me?
Sure, go ahead.
All right. Well, I can no longer be a Mets fan.
Oh,
it's
come on.
Toxic relationship, right? And Steve Cohen is a false savior.
Why?
I mean, look at what Atlanta did. Look at what Atlanta did at the trade deadline. They got four excellent outfielders, and there was Max Scherzer and Trey Turner. They could have made it all the way if they just had the motivation. And he has the money. What stopped them? And I think now they're looking at, you know, getting maybe, you know, what, six new players, position players to make it.
So, well, Robert, I understand your angle completely. However, in Steve Cohen's defense, it was year one for him. What did he bought the team in November prior to the season. Amy Bass, is that an unfair criticism of Steve Cohen?
I'm trying to think about something I care less about than the Mets. and I'm failing. But
should I call you when the 86 replay is on?
It was the first time I ever drove to Boston with my brand new driver's license. So I will say this. I think that this is a question of fandom and when is enough enough. So let's get sort of philosophical about it. That, you know, you've got a lot of data and example to back up the way you feel, but you know, teams aren't just about what we see on paper. And, you know, I almost broke up with the Red Sox last year. I did a commentary for WAMC about it because they traded literally everybody that I love. And
she
I
loves
watched
Mookie
my daughter's
Betts.
Heartbreak yeah. over Mookie Betts. But they won me back. You know, every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. And so I would say, sir, take a little while, let it all digest. and then, you know, come spring training, see how you feel.
It's also, hard to be a buyer at every trade deadline. I think the teams that have succeeded in the long run have learned that. And the Mets were in a decent situation in July to maybe, you know, get to the playoffs on their own this year.
Well, you know what, Robert? I'm going to make this statement right now on the radio. Hang in there three more years. There will be a trophy. There will be a trophy in Queens within 3 years. Steve Cohen is the man who is going to do it. Thank you for that one. 800-348-2551.
I've never seen you this optimistic.
But we got to mark this, right? Well, 3 years from today, we need to mark this.
It may be earlier than that, but I think it'll still be hanging around in 3 years unless they have to pawn it, and that all depends on the markets and futures and everything else. Bruce in Kingston. Bruce, you're on.
Yeah, I have some questions centering around LeMahieu of the Yankees, their leadoff hitter. It was revealed at the end of the season, and by the way, he had dropped 70, 80 points from last year, and it was revealed that he's going to be operated on for his hip and groin. Now, how come they didn't know about this much, or maybe they did? Somebody must have seen something. He must have known something. The impact on the Yankees would have been enormous if they had had somebody like Tyler Wade, who at some point was hitting .288. If he gets a single, it's almost an automatic double. He was even stealing third base. What a spark that would have been, and what a downfall when their leadoff hitter wasn't leading off and hitting. So I wonder how much was known about this. I think it had a terrible impact. And even you know, if the leadoff hitter gets on, a lot of Judge's home runs were just, you know, single blasts. What a difference that would have made, you know, two runs instead of one and a spark. It would have given the whole Yankees. So I wonder what you think about this.
I agree with you. I don't know the timeline for when they discovered the injury, but a huge difference in the team this year was the missing, you know, 70 points from LeMahieu's average. He went from being a batting champion to hitting in the 260s. I will say, when they had to really scramble on the infield this year with all of the injuries, he was a plus defender at third, second, and first when they needed him there. And the fact that he was missing at the very end, it burned them. I mean, their defense was a huge problem this year. LeMahieu was one of the rare bright spots.
Bruce, thank you.
Yeah, he was a great player.
Yeah, but, and I hope he bounces back.
Yeah, but as I said, I was interested in what your take was on that. I thought it was devastating.
Well, Bruce, thank you very much for the call. Amy, you want to comment on that, or do you not care about the Yankees as well?
No, well, the other thing that I'll say is that the Red Sox took Kyle Schwarber when he was literally on the disabled list.
Yeah.
Mr. Grand Slam.
That name to me again. Now, I watched the Mets play the Nationals, and he hit about 17 home runs in the series, and then they play the Red Sox, and he hits more home runs.
Yeah.
It hurts me inside.
Well, it stopped, if it makes you feel better. The hitting stopped. All of the hitting stopped.
Amy, I know it's hard, but don't you believe that the Red Sox kind of overachieved this season?
Oh, 100%. Okay. I think, you know, that once the sense of loss and the fact that it was to the Astros subsides, my goodness, they took us on a ride that was unexpected. The only person that I heard, and it was on this air, say anything about the Red Sox getting that far was Howard Herman, and I thought he was wrong and kind of stupid to say that, and he was dead on. He was totally right. So all apologies to Howard on that. He called it. So, yeah, they overachieved. Or they just showed us that, you know, sometimes it's not about what's on paper. I mean, one thing that I will say about baseball and the way it's set up, do we think that the best two teams are in the World Series right now? Well, no, not based on records. And do we think that, you know, you're just almost talking about a coin toss when you get to this level, that the two teams facing each other have records that are different? You know, they play each other 100 times and one team wins 52 games and the other, you know, 49. What do you do? It's just almost a flip of a coin when
you
get to this
I'm
level.
Glad you said flip of a coin. And Ross in Amsterdam, hang in there. We'll get to you in 1 minute. 800-348-2551. The wild card format, the one game. You want to talk about a coin flip? I hate this more than you can imagine. Amy, at least give me three games.
I understood it this year for the first time ever.
Why?
I thought it.
Because they won.
Because they won. Well, I mean, yes, I get it, but I will say this. What does Major League Baseball need more than anything else? Fans, and they're getting that. We're looking at ratings that are up markedly from the last several years. And they need drama, and drama that isn't drawn out over 5-6 hours. So I think that they got both with this one or done. And this year it went my way enormously. So I was big thumbs up.
Ian.
You know, I think baseball got a little intoxicated. I remember the 2007 one-game playoff in the National League when the Rockies and the Padres played it was like an 11 or 12 inning classic.
Game 163?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think that is the ideal. And the one-game playoff rarely lives up to that. How could it? This year, 91 wins made you the fifth-place team in the AL. Yeah. I would have no problem expanding it a little bit and getting a real wild card series ahead of the ALDS. I don't think the best team always wins 3 out of 5.
Agreed.
So to win one and advance or lose one and go home, I mean, that is very tough.
It's one bounce. It's one terrible check swing call, and that's the ball game. So I just think
But pretty soon we're playing baseball in December at this point.
Okay. I love it. Ian's still playing softball right now.
Yeah. And one more quick thing on this. We've got to figure out a way that the Giants and the Dodgers aren't playing in the division series against each other with each having 105 or 6 wins. I mean, let's reseed based on record and not who was quote-unquote the wild card.
We don't have time to have that argument.
Okay.
You and I can have that argument in the newsroom. Let's go to Ross in Amsterdam. Ross, you're on.
Hey, guys. I love sports talk. I love baseball talk.
Oh, good.
And I want to go back to why you can't have automated umpires.
Good.
And that's the simple keeping control of the personalities in the game. I'll give you a couple anecdotes. And Amy, being a fellow Red Sox fan myself, you may remember back in Dustin Pedroia's rookie year, early in his season, he was struggling at the plate, and he, after a ball three, there was a close call, ball four, and he threw his bat and started going up the first baseline, and the great Red Sox broadcaster, Joe Castiglione, said, "Oh, Dustin, don't do that," and sure enough, the umpire called a strike, and Joe Castiglione commented on the radio saying, "Dustin, wherever this next pitch is, you better swing at it, 'cause it's going to be a strike." And sure enough, it was. The other story, this one I didn't witness, but I heard, was the first time Roger Clemens faced Barry Bonds in the National League. Clemens was pitching for the Astros. And they worked a 3-2 count, and Clemens struck him out on a close pitch. And it's rumored that Bonds turned to the umpire, I can't recall who that was, you know, and said something to the effect of, "Hey, don't you think I know the strike zone by now?" And the umpire looked at him and said, "Well, that's Roger Clemens out there. Don't you think he knows what the strike zone is?"
Oh, interesting.
And those are my two comments on why you don't have automated umpires.
All right, Ian.
Yeah, I just think we know what's a strike and we know what's a ball. If you look at some replays from the Braves of the 90s, you know, Glavine and Maddox were getting 3 inches outside.
Oh, tell me about it.
We know what a strike is. We know what isn't a strike. And, you know, if you throw it over in the strike zone, it should be a strike. Even if you got crossed up with the catcher, even if the catcher was expecting a curveball and had his glove in the wrong spot, whatever. I think a strike's a strike. And I think if we have a robot, everyone can understand that.
I think it's a union thing. You're always going to see somebody back there. Amy.
I think it's an element of the game thing, too, though. There's two things on this. One, I think that Major League Baseball has to do a better job of deciding who the home plate umpire is going to be for important games in the postseason. Les Diaz had no business being there based on his record across the season. So I put that on them. I think that the other thing is that, yes, you can say a ball's a ball and a strike is a strike and a robot's going to call it. But what we've seen in soccer is that VAR has changed the game. And you would think the same thing, right? That it's, you know, you're watching it and now you're taking that human ref element off from the field. What has it done? It meant that goalkeepers now have to completely play differently because all of them moved off the line during a penalty kick before they were supposed to, and now they're having to retrain themselves.
Yeah.
So I think that, you know, as long as it's a good home plate ump who is consistent after the first, say, inning and a half as to what that night strike zone is going to be, and one of Diaz's big problems in game 4 of the ACLS was that he was all over the place to the tune of, 21 missed calls, I think that, you know, strike zones almost have a personality in baseball, and when we put the robot on there, we lose that.
Agreed. This email from Matt, who says, how great at last to see Ian Pickus talking about sports live. Should become a weekly show.
Weekly.
Well, Matt, let's not jump
to conclusions.
That's
going to cut into my softball time.
Yes. This one is from Ian. The Washington football team has changed its name. Cleveland has changed its name, if not its cringeworthy logo yet. When are we going to admit that 40,000 people doing the tomahawk chop is racist? Calling the team the Braves or the Chiefs does not honor natives. Do you think we will see an end to this in our lifetime? Amy.
Well, I think that you can change the name and you can change the logo, but you can't change what people are going to do in the stands. I agree. It is horrifying. And until we have just wider cognizance about the whys of it being horrifying, it's not going to happen. But as I said, you know, when I was having a conversation about baseball yesterday with a friend, she said, "Who are we rooting for? The racists? Who are we rooting for? The racists or the cheaters?" You know, I'll say that again, and that's the tomahawk chop, and that's where that comes from. Is it fair to the Braves? I don't know. Are you going to throw people out when they do it? I mean, that's really the only thing that can happen. How do you change the culture? You can change the rules. You can change the logo. You can change the name. Changing the culture takes more work.
Ian.
Yeah, sports aren't always the most woke area. I think the players are ahead of the leagues right now. And the fact that the commissioner yesterday, Rob Manfred, went out of his way to protect the Braves from scrutiny on this issue. I mean, I don't think we're going to see any changes right now. If the commissioner had said, this is the last year of this and we're going to fine the team and they're going to forfeit if we are playing the tomahawk chop song every half inning, then you'd see a change. But if the commissioner doesn't want to see a change, then it's not going to happen.
One of the things I do like is the fact that in this country we have some broadcasters who will actually during the game say, that is stupid. And Gary Cohen has done it time and time again when the tomahawk chop pops up. He said, I don't know how that is happening. That is stupid. And
I think that that one of the big moments for the change in terms of how the team that plays football in Washington, you know, came of age in terms of cognizance was Costas took, you know, he did that minute 30, basically verbal essay in the middle of a game saying this is why this is wrong and this is why this has to change. And so I do hope the commentators get louder about it. But wouldn't it be great if, like, the home umpire stopped play until the tomahawk chop stopped? We have certainly stopped play for worse, you know, stupider things than that. But, you know, just like Cora pulled his people off the field when he thought they were in danger against that team from New York, stop the game. You know, maybe a manager comes out of a dugout and pulls his players until the chop stops. I think that it is going to need some radical wake-up moments.
Let's grab one more call here before we go, and there's a couple of emails if we have time. Doug in Westfield. Doug, you're on.
Hey guys, great program, and I was just going to go back to, I know you'd moved on a little bit, but the robocalls versus the umpires. I think a good middle ground could be if you use the technology to maybe have something in the ump's pocket that'll buzz if it's a strike or a check swing strike, and that could sort of augment his call. So he could still make the call in the end, and it could maybe please everybody.
And he'll know when his table's done at Applebee's. So that's great. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Well, little shock treatment for the umpires.
I like the idea.
That is actually a good idea, and I've heard people mention that. That's a possibility to keep that human element in there. All right, now we only have 1 minute. Very quickly, a Penn State fan writes in, this past weekend we just took an embarrassing loss. The game was terribly coached. Injured players were starting. Yet the coach continues to hold his job. What do schools like Penn State take into consideration of firing head coaches? Ian Pickus, 30 seconds.
Write your own joke for that one.
yeah.
I don't have a leg to stand on here. The UAlbany Great Danes are 0-7 in football right now, but teams in college sports don't do anything until it's in their financial interest to do so. Take a look at LSU.
Amy Bass, you have 15.
You know, look at what the coach is making. Look at what your players are making. Look at the enormous disparity between those two things because the players aren't making anything, and realign the entire system. I've said it before, burn the NCAA down.
Amy Bass, we love your commentaries on this radio station. Your website is?
www.amybass.net.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here. This was fun. We appreciate you both weighing in, even though you're a Yankee fan and you're a Red Sox fan, and you disgust me, both of you. But thank you both for being here very much.
Ray's ready for some robot guests.
Yep.
I'm ready for a robot beer here. Rheingold, the Mets' favorite. Support comes from Wash and Wag Pet Grooming Salon, Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Professionally trained groomers, organic natural products, no cage drying. Facebook and 866-WASH-WAG. At ArtSpark, Saratoga Springs, New York, helping artists with the business of being an artist, artspark.com. Once again, thanks to Amy Bass and Ian Pickus for being here. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the calls. Thanks for the emails. Sorry if we didn't get to yours. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Phones answered today by Allie Peterson. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we dig in the dirt, so bring your hose. It's Gardening Talk with the usual suspects. Right now, 51%.